On New Year's Day 1925, Marcel Rouberol, the chief representative of the Société de Construction de Batignolles, one of the largest French engineering firms at the time, held a reception at his home near Pointe Noire for the men who worked under him. It was one of many gatherings that company employees organized to fight the boredom, homesickness, and sense of isolation that came with living and working on an inclement expanse of sand thousands of miles from home. From 1921 to 1934, men from the Batignolles lived near the coast in Middle Congo, often referred to by the French as simply the Congo, a region in the southern part of French Equatorial Africa. They worked on building the Congo-Océan Railroad, a massive construction project that the colonial government undertook in the years just after the First World War. Long heralded by Frenchmen as essential to the economic development of the region, the railroad would connect the city of Brazzaville, the colony's largest settlement on the Upper Congo River, to Pointe Noire on the Atlantic coast, where the French planned to build a deepwater port. Covering only some 512 kilometers, fewer than 320 miles, the railroad was not terribly long, but it crossed difficult terrain, especially the dreaded Mayombe, where the rails wound atop unstable, sandy soil through a region of thick forests, mountains, and gorges. A day like New Year's was worthy of a photograph. 18 white men, all in pressed white linen suits, each with his white pith helmet in his hand. Corporations are built on hierarchies, so placement and positioning were essential in the picture, which was to be sent to company headquarters in Paris. The two men front and center are Rouberol and Monsieur Martin, the lead engineer on the construction site. Around them are engineers, administrators, and overseers of the project. Two African auxiliaries, perhaps assistants or secretaries, lacking white linen and helmets, are wedged against the right edge of the image, one of them literally cut off by the frame behind their white superiors. The Batignolles men exuded confidence on that New Year's Day, none more so than Rouberol himself. His trimmed beard, neat tie, and impeccably white shoes complemented the self-assured smile on his face. Receptions like this one allowed these men and a handful of wives to come together and celebrate their accomplishments and discuss the work ahead. Despite their distance from France, executives of the Batignolles recreated some of the comforts of home. Boats from Europe brought in not only supplies to build the railroad, but regular shipments of garlic, onions, and potatoes, refrigerated cheeses and charcuterie, jams and butter, rum, wine, and Moët champagne, Vichy and Perrier mineral water, coffee, Cointreau, and cigars. A New Year's party was just the place to enjoy all that civilization could offer. Despite the inclement weather and prevalence of disease, the white men in the photograph, all well-fed and standing tall, appeared to be paragons of camaraderie, cleanliness, and health. The photo was a testament to France's determination to triumph over the climate and landscape in a part of the world that Europeans considered insalubrious and uncivilized. The men of the Batignolles, as well as champions of the railroad in France, heralded the Congo-Océan as an engineering colossus achieved in the deadly wilds of the African continent. It would, as one newspaper put it, save Equatorial Africa, regularly called the Cinderella of the French Empire, and open the region's nearly limitless reservoir of riches. While this portrait of colonial power is telling in many ways, there is another story that it does not tell, and that it in fact hides in its straightforward simplicity. Just a short walk from the New Year celebration was the construction site of the Congo-Océan, where African men and women worked 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, clearing millions of cubic meters of earth, building bridges and tunnels, and laying the ties and rails of the train line. For the 13 years of construction, the workers wore minimal clothes and lived communally in huts so crowded and poorly ventilated that many chose to sleep outdoors. They faced overseers, both European and African, who often verbally tormented and beat them. They survived on a starvation diet and often went days without eating. Fresh water was in short supply, adding to the problem of dysentery that continually weakened the labor force. At certain points, sickening or killing more than half the workers. Needless to say, French cuisine was never on the menu. A second photograph, also taken in 1925 and not far from Rouberol's home, brings the plight of these workers somewhat into focus. This image illustrates a very different side of the railroad project. The emaciated frames of these two unnamed people, identified only as a sick young woman and worker, suggest they suffered from severe malnutrition and perhaps dysentery or beriberi, a thiamine deficiency common among the poorly fed recruits. The cachexia, or extreme wasting of their bodies, is reminiscent more of famine victims or prisoners of war than of what the French insisted they were, free, protected laborers in a republican empire. Unlike the proud stances of the men of the Batignolles, these young people's bodies and faces betrayed uncertainty, humiliation, fear, and despair. It is impossible to know what exactly the sick young woman and worker thought about their predicament. The men of the Batignolles rarely documented the opinions of their workers in an effort to strip them of their voices and deny them their stories.